Good evening and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Feel Truly Alive. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. Now for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, this call is part of a series of calls that I do through a website called peopleyoushouldmeet.com. And over the course of this year, I'll be interviewing various different people that I think are doing really remarkable things in the world and just sharing them with my audience and my listeners through these calls and also on the recordings page on the peopleyoushouldmeet.com site. So this call will be recorded this evening and you'll be more than welcome to download it again tomorrow free of charge. And also you'll find on the site there's a great archive of the calls that I've done up until now as well. So you'll meet some very interesting people. Now just to give you a little bit of a rundown on how this evening's call will work, with the call itself will run for around about an hour. And over the course of the hour, I will be asking my very special guest, Nick Askew, a whole series of questions around what it actually feels like to be alive. And also we'll be exploring his journey as a filmmaker specifically through his project of Monday 9 a.m, but also more recently his new project called Soul Biographies. Nick and I have known each other for a couple of years, and it was actually quite coincidental that in the way that we actually met. I can remember it was a lazy Sunday afternoon, probably a couple of years ago, where I was sitting at home surfing the net, and I came across this site that actually took my breath away. And very rarely do I connect with a site that really makes me stop and think, you know, this is really interesting what's going on here. But it just happened to be the Monday 9 a.m. site, and I think the movie that I saw was the movie with a clown, or the mime, and literally it was a phenomenal bit of filmmaking. And as soon as I saw that piece of footage, I just knew instantly that Nick Askew was a guy that I wanted to connect with, that I wanted to hang out with, and also someone that I wanted to interview and find more information about. And anyway, like, I sort of had that passing thought on the Sunday afternoon, and it just so happened that I was meeting up with a friend of mine the following day, Nikki, for a pot of tea here in London. And just through the course of our conversation, Nikki just casually asked, look, do you know Nick Askew? And I just remarked to her, you know, it's funny that you mention that, because, like, literally yesterday, for the very first time, I've came across Nick's work, and I really resonated with it, and I sort of set the intention in that moment that I would meet him one day and connect with him. And anyway, Nikki said, look, you're in luck, because 15 minutes from now I'm actually meeting Nick here for a cup of tea. So literally within 15 minutes I was sitting in front of Nick Askew talking about life and about his passion for filmmaking and what it actually means to be truly alive, which is the subject matter of our call this evening. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our very special guest to the call, Nick Askew. How are you going there, Nick?
Very well. Thanks, Damien. Odd title. You chose that.
Odd title. It is, yeah.
It wasn't something I said, was it?
No. It's just something that I've always just been fascinated with. And, yeah, I thought it was always something interesting to sort of explore.
It's such a kind of odd mix of words, how to feel truly alive.
Yeah.
I think maybe how to notice that you're alive might be closer to the point.
Yeah. So tell me, how do you actually notice that you're alive, Nick?
Start on something easy.
We'll start there.
All right. Well, you just got to be able to see. I mean, what's your site called? People You Should Meet.
PeopleYouShouldMeet.com.
Just something occurred. I was listening to a talk. Except I probably wasn't. I was looking at the front of the site bit, and I thought the big pitfall, or not pitfall, or the thing that people quite often stumble over, and myself included sometimes, is people you should meet, but quite often you meet someone and you can't see them. Mm. And I think this whole thing's wrapped up in the same thing. When you meet someone, for some reason, and I think I know what it is, but I might be wrong, but for some reason You can't quite see who's there. You think you do, but because you have some intention out of the situation you're in, you can't see them. And so you could spend your life hanging around with loads of people who seem really interesting, but you'll never really see them, and you'll never get the experience of what you might deem truly alive, because you're kind of closed off to that person.
Mm.
You know, and then sometimes you land yourself in a situation, usually by accident, where, I don't know, you meet someone and you have no idea about who they are, and you have no aspiration out of the conversation. You're not trying to squeeze a result out of it in any way. And the most amazing thing happens, but you can't describe it. You end up going to your mates or, you know, your wife or your girlfriend or something. You say, God, you got to meet this guy, you know. And then you find yourself sounding a little bit like a fool because you can't quite describe what went on. It was just one of those cool conversations where there were no results required, and you actually saw the person, but you can't describe it because what you experienced was intangible. And I think that's probably the point at which we could enter the conversation. Because that seems useful to me.
Yeah.
You know, how do you hang out in this world? How do you hang out with people and not have an intention out of the conversation, out of the encounter? And some of those are very obvious, and some are very unobvious. Obvious one, I think we've talked about this before, you know, if you're, you know, I spend a long time in doing lots of things, but, you know, in business, if you're going in to get a sale, you know, very obvious example of it, you go and meet someone and your intention is to get a sale and to get a check signed or a bank transfer or an order, and therefore your conversation is based around that, and I would imagine, because this is my experience, you think you see that person, but what you're seeing is a checkbook with dollar signs or pound signs. You know, it may not be that obvious to you, but that's, you're talking to the possibility of that person signing an order, and you completely miss the person. Sometimes that doesn't happen, but more often it does. That's an obvious thing, but quite often, outside of a situation that is so obvious, you'll get yourself into a situation where you meet people and you want them to do something else. You tell them what you think they need to hear in order to get something. That might just be as simple as, or as subtly simple as, validation. You know, I just want you to love me. I just want you to make me feel okay, to make me feel important. And therefore you start talking, not terribly authentically, you start telling stories, you start dropping into the conversation how important you are or the important things you've done. Man, I think we've all done that. And you don't feel great about it if you really notice. You're trying to get a result. You're trying to get something out of the encounter. And that, I think, you know, this is a work in progress for me. I'm just kind of curious about it. So I'm kind of noticing as I go along, as I make films, as I drift through life, noticing how I feel and if there are any intentions out of particular situations. And I must say, there's stark different experiences I have of when I'm in a place trying to squeeze a result out of it and when I'm not. And so I guess, you know, if I had to paraphrase it, it's like, you know, that noticing the two different experiences is quite extraordinary in the fact that when you're not trying to become someone else or to get somewhere else or to get a result, the most extraordinary things happen. I think there's a point you come to where you realize that there's actually nowhere to go apart from where you're sitting right there, and there's no one else to become. And that's an amazing position to be in, albeit sometimes for a very short period of time before something happens and you think, right, okay, I've got to get better at this, or I need to do this, or I need to push my business this way. It's very I don't know if it is counterintuitive. It's probably intuitive, but it's countercultural. It's counter what we seem to have picked up along the way. And it doesn't make any sense as well, which is the other odd thing. It just doesn't make any sense. And now, if stuff doesn't make sense, I seem to have this notion that it's probably a pretty cool thing. Because all the most amazing stuff that I come across doesn't seem to make any sense. You can't work it out in your brain, in your head. And for me now, that's okay.
Yeah.
So you know, people you should meet, you could be listening. I don't know, I have no clue, you know, whether it's two men and a dog, or is it three men in a boat or something, who's listening to this, or many more. I don't know, but I don't know. I would hazard a guess as to why people might be listening. There could be all sorts of reasons. It's probably the same way people watch my films or other films, or enter a conversation. You know, and I do this all the time, to be honest. You watch a film, it'll be a short one or a long one or whatever, and you start off and you're trying to do a number of things. You're trying to agree with it. You're trying to work out where it's going. You're trying to work out whether you really want to watch it. You're trying to work out what's in it for you. And you get an experience of that, watching that film, or indeed having a conversation or listening to a conversation with someone. You know, we tend to be very linear and trying to work it all out as we go along. But in that situation, your mind's in two minds. It's almost in lots of places. And then there could come a point where you just kind of give up on that. It's like, well, I don't know, but I'm just going to, I don't know, see what happens. And then you get a very different experience out of it. So, you know, if I was listening into a telephone conversation that, you know, in people you should meet, I would probably have dialed in, because I think that I might get something out of it, you know? I might get some advice. I'm looking for answers. Don't happen to know what the real questions are, which is often the case. But I'm looking for answers to something. You know, I know that I should be progressing with my life. I should be becoming someone. I should be becoming healthier or richer, or all those things that you can list out. And therefore, the way that I listen to a conversation is a very ordinary, run-of-the-mill experience. I said, not ordinary. It's a very common experience that I have. I've got one ear on the conversation, one eye on the conversation, but the other pair is somewhere else, thinking about, am I getting somewhere? But you don't need to do that. I don't know, what if you did stuff just for no particular reason, for no particular result?
Yeah. Now, with your filmmaking, like, you very rarely meet a subject or a person that's going to feature in your film before the actual creation of the film. Now, is that in terms of the process of that filmmaking journey and just being completely present in the moment to capture that experience, is that part of that process as well, of actually just really witnessing the person that's sitting there in front of you?
Well, yeah, probably. I, at the beginning, I never thought about it. I just started, you know, it seemed like a good idea. And there was a big difference between wanting to do something, which I spent a lot of my life doing. You know, I want to do this. I think this will be a good idea. Even to the stage where I believe something, you know. But that still comes with doubt. And then there comes a situation with any particular thing where you know. And knowing is a very different experience. So, you know, I knew that it was right to get married almost instantaneously, and there was no stress around the situation. It wasn't I wonder if anything. It was just I know, and with films it was the same. It's just like, oh, I have no idea where that idea comes from, but I know that it's the right thing to do, and there's no way in that situation you can't question it. With me, it's like you get an idea into your head and you just know a thought comes from somewhere. I think I worked out where they come from, actually. And it's not emanating from inside my head, but a thought arises somewhere and you just kind of know. Lots of other kind of rubbish passes through as well. But sometimes you just know. So starting films was quite simple in that way. Yeah. Although I was a bit perplexed as to why, but then I made one and another and another and another and just kept on going.
Yeah.
And didn't really think about, I don't tend to think a lot, to be honest, about how stuff works, because it doesn't necessarily make it work any better for me. And so, excuse me, I slowly worked out, I suppose, not because I had a burning desire to, but I just kind of noticed stuff about what happens when I make films. And it's kind of no different, I think, than when I have conversations with anyone, or lots of people anyway. And there is an element of wanting or having an ability to see someone without seeing their story, which is half the thing. You know, people might be listening, oh, he's a filmmaker, that's cool, or that's a bit crap. You know, you have an opinion about it, but I'm not really a filmmaker. I happen to have a camera, and I happen to used to have a really bad camera, and now I've got quite a good camera. And I happen to have worked out how to edit films and create a style of my own choosing, largely based on ignorance, on not knowing how to do it, and not knowing any of the other filmmakers. But I'm not really a filmmaker, because as soon as you put me into a bracket as a filmmaker, you have all these assumptions about, you know, who I am. And so in that same fashion, if I go and meet someone, it's kind of easier for the first time, especially I don't tend to research anyone that I film. I'd rather not know. Sometimes you just know because they've been in the public eye and you kind of know that they produce some music or they've written books, but I wouldn't read them, because that leads the conversation down a very different path. It leads to what you might term an interesting conversation, but I don't think it's going to make you feel necessarily more what I might term alive, more vibrant, or kind of engaged in the world. It often is quite heavy. You know, I've had some very interesting conversations with some very clever people, or so they told me, but it didn't make me feel great. Once again, if you notice how you feel when you talk to someone, it's like this is opening myself up for something. Someone's probably fallen asleep by now. Sounding a bit serious. It's like, but yeah, only like this, honestly. But if you notice how you feel when you talk to someone or you're with someone, the most amazing things happen. You start to realize how someone or how a situation or a thing or a person makes you feel. And it is the most amazing thing. And so, you know, in meeting someone for the first time, you know, sometimes you can draw stuff out of people just by having no opinion, because opinions are just based on a sense of right and wrong. And I'm not really sure there you can have that with someone if you meet them for the first time, and there's no sense of judgment. You know, I don't know, you know, it seems like it would be a good idea if we were to make a film about this, but I don't really care, because I just want to have a conversation about everything and nothing. I think that's far more interesting. And a judgment about whether someone did something good or did something bad as well, also on the face of it, gets a bit sticky. Underneath and very subtly, it shuts people down like you wouldn't believe. They wouldn't come out to play.
Yeah.
Like, you won't believe, well, you might believe, how powerful the way that you are underneath it all affects everything around you. You know, people pick up on the obvious, on the physical, on the words you say, and perhaps even the physicality of how you're sitting and stuff like that, and whether you've got a smile on your face. But you could put up a front that way and be feeling dreadful inside, or be feeling judgmental inside, and people get that, and they don't come out to play. You know, they don't. The real person doesn't show up. And so if you don't have that, and you are feeling peaceful and all the stuff that goes along that with inside, people have a habit of innately trusting you and that situation, and they start to open up as such, you know? And then you have a far more interesting conversation. Mm. And that happens even with a camera around.
Yeah.
And that's cool, because it means that you can share your experience of the world.
Yeah.
So your experience of the very same person that someone else met is, it can be very different, but you can share that with people. And I guess that's what I do in films. I think probably in all the films I've made, and they are short films, but I think I've made 110 in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
You know, some of them take quite a while and some of them are a bit quicker and stuff. But in all that time, even with film commissions, I think I've been asked to see an edit 3 times.
Mm.
So there's an absolute trust of, you know, we had a conversation and there was an element of trust and, you know, I don't need to see it before it goes out.
Mm.
I'm not saying that will happen forever, but, you know, it does tend to happen. And so there's a huge, I know there's something going on there. And I think I understand what it is.
Yeah.
And there's all parts of elements in that as well, you know, along the lines of how I've been talking. It's like if I go in to try and squeeze a clever film out, you know, I might have told you this one before, but I wanted to make a film about peace because I heard all these people talking about peace on the news, all these very important people, you know, running the United Nations and stuff, and they seem to have this idea that peace is a process. You do a whole load of things and peace happens. And that just seems, I don't know, it seems steeped in a little bit of ignorance in the fact that peace can't be that. Peace has to emanate from inside and a state, an individual's state. And it's a very different thing to doing a lot of stuff. And so I thought I'd be clever and go off and make a film about it. And I stumbled upon a lady who was, I don't know how you'd describe it, big in the peace world. She'd been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize lots of times and hadn't actually won it. Maybe she will next time. But won lots of other peace prizes and stuff. Spent, must have 3 or 4 hours drinking tea with her in a back room. And I completely forgot to mention it. It completely slipped my mind to talk about it. But we had, you know, conversations about everything and nothing. Just rambled on. And the feeling I was left after that conversation, as with many conversations, is, that's amazing. You know, what a cool conversation. I couldn't actually remember a lot of the stuff we talked about. Lucky I taped it. And that wasn't because I got a bad memory, but it wasn't really about the detail. It was about the way I felt. And if you have your idea, your mind fixed on, am I going to get something out of this conversation? You miss it. You completely miss the essential part of what's going on. You have no ability to listen beyond the words, which is where life kind of seems to hang out, kind of beyond the words. So, you know, if someone's listening to this and then they're trying to work out where on earth I'm going, you really haven't got a clue. Or you haven't got a chance because I haven't got a clue because I don't know where it's going to go. And I do most things like that now, you know?
Yeah.
If I tried to work out what I was going to say in an hour with you, you know, where it was going to go, we probably could have quite an interesting thing, and I could give you a linear story of how Monday 9 a.m. the film project started and how it's going on, and I suppose it could have been interesting, but probably only for me, probably not for someone else. You know, it might have given someone a little bit of a spark of an idea, but it wouldn't be because of the way I did it. It would have been just a small point in time that might have done something for someone.
Yeah.
But I probably would have bored myself. I would have probably fallen asleep for 20 minutes.
I actually just wanted to draw you back a little bit and just talk about that moment of awareness when you realized that you had to, or you were being called to explore the creation of film. And I was just wondering if you could just describe in a little bit more detail exactly what that felt like, or...
How do you want to know?
throw.
Was it just a deep knowing that was in an instant? Was it an epiphany? Was it something that you probably felt that was there all the time that just came into consciousness? How would you actually describe that moment?
I don't know, but it's kind of interesting why anyone would want to know. But it's just when you know. With me, I don't think you can quite describe it with words. And I think a lot of people talk a lot about a lot of this stuff a lot of the time with an awful lot of words and probably little experience, but I don't know. I suppose if you started to write about it, you could write a very clever manual on how to do it. But I'm not sure that would be right, because I think it might be how to do it for you, and it probably wouldn't be very valid for anyone else. So I don't really know what the answer is. If the answer is useful, but I suppose when I think about it, what did it feel like? I don't know. All through my life, I've felt very certain about stuff. Not everything, but generally, it was just straight through the middle. And I used to think I was unemotional, actually. In fact, I used to be told I was unemotional. And what I came to understand people meant by that is I wasn't up and down. But to me, that sounded like a good thing. But then I kind of, for a while, I thought, oh, maybe it's not. Maybe I should be, ecstatic one moment and then, just human, as people say. But then I realized, life is the most amazing thing when the stuff around you doesn't affect you in that way. The stuff around, the things that are outside, the events of life, don't make you feel ecstatically happy or dismally sad. That, when you're inwardly referenced, I think that's probably quite a good thing. So a sense of knowing was very much in the middle, I would say. It wasn't bright lights or anything like that. It was just, and there's, when I met my wife, and well, she wasn't my wife then, obviously, but that would have been bizarre. But when I met her, and we left where we met, she flew off back to New York, and I flew off back to London. I didn't even have a phone number or email address, and it was like, well, I just know. And then she turned up in London the week after. You just know. And so that's the feeling of it. It's just a sense of knowing. And to be honest, I'm sure everyone certainly that's listening to this call has that sense of knowing an awful lot of the time, if not always. Just don't notice it. Mm. If you're doing something, I'm trying to think of some of the things I'm doing at the moment. There's lots of things, I got this project called Soul Biographies, which is kind of Monday 9 a.m. 2.0, or what they call it, 2.0, which is kind of moving it on a bit, and we're going to film, subjects that many, many people have heard of. And so the hope is that it will be useful in the fact that people want to see the films because of the drama of it all. Wow, I want to find out about that person because I've heard they're really good at this, The Warren Buffetts and the Oprahs of this world. And then what they're faced with is a very human individual who is much more like them than they first supposed. And maybe that will help people see. But in doing that, the feeling is, I just know it's right. But in doing some other stuff, I kind of know it's not right. I've got this, feeling underneath it all. It just makes me feel uncomfortable. Thing is, I don't always recognize it.
Yeah.
In other words, I'm not really being that honest. The amount of things I've tried is extraordinary. I started out as an explorer, I guess, for want of a better phrase, and canoed the Congo and Amazon and stuff, and that felt really cool. Not because I wanted to be an explorer. They just seemed like good things at the time, and every single part of it made me feel just great, In that kind of calm sort of way. It wasn't a showy sort of way, strangely enough. And then other things that I did along through the years didn't make me feel like that, although I did convince myself that I did feel like that and I was quite important, you know, to the point where I become a CEO of a company, and that felt important, but it felt awful. You know, I said no so many times, and I made the same mistake almost immediately after as well. I'm not sure it was a mistake, actually, but I started to notice how I felt about certain things. And I think everyone, you know, if anyone listening just casts the mind to the stuff right in front of the nose at the moment, and you were forced to answer yes or no. Is it right? Yes. Or is it right? No. No, 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 I want to think about it, whatever. Just the initial visceral gut feeling as, is this right? You know, that sometimes your answer would surprise you. And it gets kind of messed up. You know, our ability to recognize that gets messed up because we've convinced ourselves that the definition of what we deem success is a particular thing. And I think that's probably where stuff goes a little off center. You know, a traditional, you know, I can only take my experience, I guess, but there came a point in my life where I used to do a lot of stuff just because, you know, you just get a madcap idea and give up work and head off somewhere. And everyone would say, you're nuts because it's hard to get a job when you get back, da-da-da. But I didn't really care about that because I didn't really have many needs. And actually now I realize that I have no needs. But there comes a time, or there came a time with me, where I believed that I had to be running a company or have a big share in a company because that's what everyone else said around. That was the experience of the world that I was bang in the middle of. And so I kind of lost sight of what was really, I won't say important, but what the point was.
So would you say that you had this deep knowing coming in, and then, say, through the corporate experience, did you lose sight of that, or?
No, because I don't think the corporate experience necessarily makes you lose sight of it. I've met the most amazing people in corporate life, and they exist within corporate life, and they have an amazing experience within corporate life. And to be honest, there were times that I was in it, and I did have amazing experiences because corporate life is full of people. The world's full of people. What I do now is full of people. You just got to be able to see what's around, and just know it's right for you at that, or that it's serving you at that particular time. But here's the thing, you know, in any one moment, someone or a situation can make you feel more of who you are or less of who you are. Mm. And I suppose that's a bit of a vague definition, but, you know, when you leave this telephone call, you might feel, God, you know, I'm a bit confused. And that would be a good thing, to be honest. I'm a bit confused, but I feel, I don't know, I feel strangely lighter. Or you might feel completely the opposite. You know, what a waste of time, you know. Now I can get on with something useful and feel worse. So you have that ability. Everyone does. You just don't always notice it. And so, you know, you're talking about this. I was taking the piss a bit out of feeling truly alive, but I think the point is that you notice that you're alive.
Yeah.
Because the feelings are there whether you engage your brain, whether you do... whether you analyze it, whether you notice it or not, they're there. You might not notice it, but they're still there, and they still make you feel a particular way. So I guess the point is just noticing it and being curious about it. And curiosity is, I've come to understand, is the most amazing thing. I don't know if you saw that film I made called Curiosity recently, with a guy called Seth Godin.
Oh, look, I did see that movie. Like, he's one of my... I absolutely love Seth Godin, actually.
I've come to read his blog recently. I filmed him, and I didn't really know who he was, to be honest. He emailed me first, I think. And then I said, I saw he'd written a book called All Marketers Are Liars.
Yeah,
what he meant, you know, it was, you know, it's a
all
kind of...
All marketers, storytellers.
You know, why why tell people what you think they want to hear in order to get them to do what you want them to do? Why don't you just tell them the truth? You know, and that, for me, that's quite a cool topic. So anyway, I dropped in up the Hudson in New York State. Not for very long. I met him, really nice guy, had these conversations, and I sat on the footage for a long, long time. And then one day, it seemed, like I do with lots of people, and then suddenly it's like, oh, okay, time to make the film. So got up, got the guitar out, recorded something that seemed appropriate, and got to editing the film. Made the film about curiosity, and I think, I can't remember exactly, but there was a lot in there about this difference between people who are curious and people who are fundamentalist. In other words, you know, right, I'm going to listen to this call, but I'm going to, before I actually open my ears and listen to what this guy's going to say, I want to know whether I agree with him. Kind of thing, the definition of fundamentalism. You know, don't let anything into your sphere before you know whether you agree and whether it fits into your model of the world. And so that's what we're making the film about. And then it got me thinking, you know, like, I seem to be in this perpetual wandering around the world, just to be honest, it doesn't matter whether I'm sitting on my backside playing the guitar or walking the dog or talking to people, just wondering about everything. It's like, with no, and that I started to dwell on curiosity. And then someone I met who was, oh, they had a big title, what's it called? I can't remember, they're a company, and they were very clever. And they said, God, you ask a lot of questions, don't you? And that was the point at which I realized that I probably do ask a lot of questions myself and in the films and stuff, but I don't give a monkeys about the answer. Because I realized in dwelling on Seth's film that once you get to the answer, you lose the curiosity. And if life is hidden in the curiosity and your ability to live in this thing called curiosity, which might not be the right word for some people, but for me it was, if it's hidden in that, and then you get to the answer, you're going to feel different, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as an observation, clever people who are important, or should I say self-important, who seem to have found the answers, don't seem to be very happy. And people who are just engaged and, like, just curious about stuff, just want to turn stuff over and go and do stuff without a particular reason, seem to be happy. And that just seems, it's as basic as that. And, you know, I meet a lot of people. And the thing is, I think everyone innately has that in them. I spend a lot of time with different types of people, and the whole point of Monday 9 a.m. and now filmographies is it really is not anything to do with what you've done. That's the attraction. You know, you think, oh, this person's important, or I love that person, or, you know, oh, Seth, he's a really cool thinker, which he is, you know, and so I'm interested in that. The point is, underneath it all, if you can see the very same person in front of you as the next person, then I think you probably got it. You got something. You know, you got this ability to see people without judgment, and that's when you realize that you're part of it all.
Yeah.
And that's the point. You see, I think we have this idea that we're not, and I think that's really cool, because that's the human journey, it seems. I don't know if you saw that film I did with all the books.
I did see that as well, yeah, too.
Yeah, with the dog. It wasn't just to put my dog in the middle.
Yeah.
I didn't know. But I saw, it was a kind of ironic film for me, because I don't read many books, largely because they confuse me. I can read, I want to make that clear. The general cadence of the film, the general direction of the film is we are part of everything. We are just part of everything, and it doesn't really make sense, and physically you can't necessarily see it, but we are. And then somehow we become separated, so we think that there's this journey to take. And so we head off into life, and we believe that we got to become someone. I think that's right. It's called the perilous journey of becoming a someone. So you head off into life and you do all these things to become someone, to become important, to become worthy, to become more interesting, to become this and that. And you head off somewhere and you're looking for the answers to this. You know, how do I do this? What do I do? Do I build a company, become important, become independently wealthy, you know, da-da-da. And you're looking for advice all the way along the way because it's the obvious thing to do. Someone must know. Come on, someone must know the rules to this game.
Mm.
And so you listen, and so, you know, massive amount of books. I did this, I'm sure they weren't sued, but it was, Trafalgar, Waterstones, you know, the one with the black front on Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
That's the bookshop I went to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was walking between two meetings, and I snuck in, and there was no one there. But there must have been a huge personal development area, or self-development, or whatever they call it. And so I shot about 250 book titles in the end, of which I obviously didn't use them all. But
yeah,
because there are so many answers to get, you know, it's like it seems really complex. And so you head off. But the truth is, in this ridiculous journey that we kind of term life, there's nowhere to go. There really isn't. It seems like there is, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's a paradox, and if you can't get a paradox in your head, it's really going to do you in. And it doesn't make any sense, as I said, but there's nowhere to go. You're standing in it all the time. It's a complete mystery. Give up. You won't understand it, but you don't need to understand it to get the experience. And so it seems that all we're looking for is this experience of being together, being the same thing. And so most behavior, I would imagine, comes from this deep desire to recognize that you're at home, but you're there. So I guess the film was really about, it was a bit of a joke, but then not a joke. It was like, okay, so loads of people saying we can tell you exactly what you got to do. But the fact is, you already know, you just got to notice it, you got to recognize it.
Yeah.
And so books and courses and gurus and stuff don't work, but paradoxically they do, because they can provoke you to realize something, to remember something.
One thing you mentioned earlier on in the call was around questioning. And like how does someone who would like to ask themselves better questions about life, how would they actually go about doing that?
Don't ask questions. Just let them come. I mean, there's two types of questions, I think. There's a clever sort of question, which is constructed in the confines of your own mind. And then there's questions that come to you. I just give up trying too hard. If you try to sit down and be clever and construct a set of questions that might lead someone somewhere, I think you're probably going to get a bit stuck. But I don't know. You know when you're just sitting down, when you're just sitting down, I don't know, at a bus stop or on the top of a bus. If you're guys are in London, you know, great, go and sit on the top of a double-decker bus, front left, always the best place. And your mind's just drifting. Questions just come to you. It's nothing to do with you. In fact, I've just been re-editing that film about quantum physics. Did you remember that one
with Dr. Quantum?
Yeah, and I made it years ago, and it was made in iMovie. I made my first 30 films on iMovie, you know, and they were a bit they were a bit slow, largely because I didn't know how to use the type or the titling. I did know how to use the titling, but I didn't. There was a restriction in the titling, which meant the average question went over four screens, which I'm not sure was totally helpful. So I've been remaking them, but in remaking some of them, I've been rethinking. And the thing that I couldn't get out of my head in the conversation with Fred, I mean, I had a great time in Bath, it's 2005. We're just kind of sitting there talking about the nature of quantum physics, which seems a lot cleverer than I have the capacity for. But actually, I really think I get it. And thinking on this thing, you know, thoughts become things, and, you know, just think yourself into a great life and da-da-da. I see that happening, but I also see people not knowing, they're wanting stuff, and that doesn't seem to work. But what really intrigued me, and something Fred provoked me into, was where on earth does thought come from?
Mm.
you think stuff, and you know, you have an imagination and stuff, you think stuff, where does it come from? And I'm not sure exactly the answer, but I think there are probably, in fact, this is a thought I had in the last few days, I think there are probably two types of thought. There are thought based on need, you know, okay, come on, let's think of a clever question, or let's think about how I can get wealthy. Let's think about, you know, how I can get to somewhere. And then there's a very different type of thought, which doesn't seem to emanate from you. Just comes in somewhere. And yeah. I think that's where quantum physics is starting or has, I don't really know, started to realize, you know, I call the film Something from Nothing, and the observation of quantum physics is that the universe seems to come into being when the observer observes something. So you just kind of observe something and suddenly it just kind of pops up. And I think that's probably where the nature of thought comes from. So when you're talking about questions, how do you ask yourself questions? Don't. They just turn up. So just give up. and that's, I mean, I can't say that. That's silly. But it's my experience. You know, I just wander around and things start to, maybe occur is a better way. So, you know, I'll be walking the dog and I'll just think of a conversation I had with someone. I'll think about this conversation. I have a whole load of, I have a whole load of daughters downstairs trying to get in. and a dog. And a wife, actually. But I'm not supposed, they're supposed to be trying to get in. But these thoughts just kind of occur. You know, I'll be thinking about the conversation we had. Well, you said it was a bit of a one-way conversation. Sorry about that. By the way, when I film, quite often I hardly say a single word.
Yeah.
You know, because you need to just be quiet sometimes. But I guess since you called me, I felt...
Yeah, quite... I think that there is something quite magical about that, just allowing the dialogue to flow in the direction that it's...
Just
in the direction that it wants to naturally flow.
This is what happens when someone talks to you. You know, you ask a question which perhaps someone's never been asked. It's so unobvious, and it's come from that place I was talking about. It's like, oh, I have no idea why I've got to ask them this, but I'll just ask them this. And it's pretty provocative, but because you're not judging them as to be an idiot or to be really clever or anything like that, it seems to work. And the person always sits there and is thinking, gets really uncomfortable, it seems, and then looks to you to get you off the hook, for you to get them off the hook. And, you know, your obvious response is, right, well, what I meant was... But if you just keep quiet, which I kind of learned just by looking back at the tapes, actually, the film tapes, that whenever I tried to butt in and stuff like that, it got a very different type of response. But quite often people need some time, and sometimes a long time. And if you've ever sat in silence opposite someone you don't really know for 2 minutes, when they're obviously struggling, it seems like a lifetime.
Mm.
But it's quite magical.
So during those moments when you're really staying present and really observing someone through the lens of a camera, what is it that's like going through your mind, through your heart? What are you looking to really capture through your filmmaking?
What is that? I'm not looking to capture anything.
Yeah.
That's the difference. You know, that's the difference. Mm. It's like, if I'm sitting there trying to direct it, like, and I mean direct it as in it's scripted or push it in a particular way, the whole thing seems really dry.
Mm.
It just does. You know, I've come to be able to spot life and stuff, the most unobvious stuff. But to me, it just seems a lot.
Yeah.
If I try to direct it and be clever, you know, I think I can push this talk about something and, you know, underlying it's like, that would be interesting for people. It falls flat. It might seem interesting, but it's flat and it doesn't do anyone any good. like I've been told some extraordinary stuff. You know, when you get in a position of trust, I guess, which seems to happen sometimes, people tell you stuff they never told anyone, but they never told themselves as well. So they were exploring stuff, and then some physical details about stuff that would go around YouTube like a rash on a Monday morning. You know, millions of people would see it because of its innate quality of drama and, you know, the stuff we're all trying to be interested in as a dodge from the real issues in life, from life. And I couldn't. They tell you this stuff, and you wouldn't put it in a film because it's just not useful. It doesn't serve any purpose apart from to get more people to watch it, but it doesn't make those people feel any, you know, any better.
Mm.
You know, so if I go out to create a clever film, I don't. You know, or I hope I don't. Sometimes I might have done. I just recognize the fact that that's not what I should be doing. You know, if I'm just trying to film what I see and share what I see, really for me, you know, if I start to get into thinking, oh, there's a particular audience, would this be useful to, you know, divorcees or people who are really poor but want to be really rich or, you know, that kind of thing, then I think I kind of lost it because I'm presuming that I know the answer for those people, and I don't. I just don't, and I never could hope to. So all I can do is make a film that makes me feel a certain way, and that's how I edit, by the way.
Yeah.
It is almost totally based on feeling.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you see the conversation. You see, I was commissioned to make a film or a series of films to capture the soul of a country.
Yeah.
And that country happened to speak a whole load of languages, none of which I understand, which is interesting. Spanish and all different Mayan dialects. And so I was out there for three and a half weeks with people not having a clue what they were talking about, but I did. I had to listen to what was really going on, which is the most amazing experience. And I have made films in Spanish, and they've been screened all over this particular country, and I didn't actually know what was being said, but it seemed to work.
Mm.
Because I was listening to something else. I was listening to how it made me feel and something else that you can't really describe. And that was a really cool experience because it made me notice what goes on in conversations in my own language more. I started to notice, but now I notice more. I don't always notice. But you know, more often than not, I can notice. And I can notice how I feel about anything. I also have a massive capacity to not notice as well. I think we all do.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that my ability to notice stuff is more than my ability not to notice stuff. And that's how I tend to direct stuff. So if you talk about, you know, Monday 9 a.m., you know, Monday 9 a.m. is changing now.
Describe how, like the movement into the soul biographies and how the filmmaking is actually evolving for you.
Yeah, well, look, Monday 9 a.m. started because it started. It was like, oh, I've got to make a film. Or I've got to make films, and I borrowed a camera and pressed the red thing at the back, which was the record button, and then worked out on iMovie how to edit a film, and then worked out how to stream it. Well, in fact, I learned a year later that I didn't work out how to stream it, and me and my friend Robbie had been putting the wrong size video into the wrong size player, and so everyone had looked a little thinner or fatter than they were meant to be. But no one knew the answer then, you know, and that was 2.5 years ago, and that was before YouTube came about. Well, nearly 3 years ago, actually. And so it just started because, and we tried throughout. I can remember the experience of trying to make it work, you know. I wonder what the answer is, you know, and with my friend Dave, we were looking at distribution models and looking at all the logical things. But it seems to me that when you think you know the answers and you're trying stuff and you think you know the formula, it seems to close it. It shuts down the possibilities. Like, if you're looking to spread life, if you're looking to make stuff that makes you feel great and hopefully other people, and you think you know how it's going to spread, then you've immediately shut the possibilities down. So we tried lots of things, and it was, you know, we've had a frustrating and a great time doing it. And, you know, I think we probably made Monday Night AM Films for 2.5 years, and I think there are 50 or just over in distribution as such. In fact, now, soon Monday 9am films won't really be shown at Monday 9am. They'll be shown at Dave's channels, which is, I think it's called theinspirationalchannel.com. That's where they'll be shown for people.
Okay.
And people will be able to license them and download them and stuff like that. But I was hoovering one day. I know, bad admission, but that's where I get a lot of my thoughts. Aimlessly sucking up dust around the house, and then I was like, oh, soul biographies, that's a good... The name had been in my mind for a while, and then I suddenly realized that's what I've got to do next. Hoovering accident. There you go. I've said
brilliant.
It. It's a hoovering accident. And on a Saturday morning, no one else apart from me and the dog were in the house, and it was like, now I know that's the next thing. And so that was just a decision made almost immediately. And if I'd started to think of a project plan for it, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't have happened in the most magnificent way that it has, like everything.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, I've got to tell someone I know, and loads of people wanted to get involved. It's like, and now this project, I have this agreement, I have a partner, it's majorly funded. I mean, majorly funded, which is fantastic. I mean, there is no lack of anything I need. We'll be there to do it, you know. But we don't know. The analogy is, we're building a boat. We haven't got a clue how we're building the boat or what it will look like, let alone where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And that's a very good thing. There's no plan. We have no licensing plan. We have concepts of stuff, you know. They just seem to occur. And, you know, yesterday a guy from HBO called up and said, you know, I've been a fan of your films for a year and watched them all, and it occurs to me that we want to work with you, you know. Oh, that's nice. That's cool. You know, I wouldn't have really thought I haven't thought of that. And then it turns out he arranges the TED conference and there's all sorts of stuff we could do there. And if I try and work out everything and put it into a project plan, I won't see anything. I'll completely shut down my ability to just spot stuff going on.
Mm.
Of course, you have to deliver stuff, and it's a fine line. You know, you can't sit on your backside and just notice stuff. You have to do stuff as well.
Yeah.
But it's not like I do nothing. But it's a very different feel, and I don't have a big structure up around me, which it seems to really help. You know, if you've built an organization with lots of mouths to feed and stuff, you feel a responsibility, which is perhaps a little difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
But we're on this kind of cool journey and have no idea where it's going. And to be honest, I think that's, for me, that's a great thing. I don't know. It's like, and I know as soon as I think I do know, I don't. In fact, that's one thing I know for sure. As soon as I know, I'm wrong.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, Nick, we've just come up to the hour. I certainly, personally, would be very excited to see how that project develops, as I have been sort of monitoring and observing and really engaging with the whole Monday 9am project as well. Now, just in closing, I was just wondering if you could, if there are any final words that you wanted to share with people.
Oh, that if there's one thing, just one thing you have to know, and I mean one thing, I'm probably the wrong person. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, the answer. It's like, everyone, it's all different. It's just I don't know, it's just curious, mysterious. It's what you want it to be. You know, you the very same things to two different people are experienced very different ways, and it never seems to be about changing the things of or in your life, ever. It just seems to be about changing the way that you experience that. And to me, it seems really simple, but not very easy sometimes.
Yeah.
In other words, you can feel shit, you know, really bad about stuff for no particular reason or for a particular reason. And inside an instant, the whole world can seem different. And it's never to do with the stuff. And, you know, so there's nowhere to go necessarily.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean we can't go somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think there's all sorts of courses and advice and books and directions and processes and stuff to go through. They just seem too clever. They just seem that it's not that complex. And I think that all those things stand the danger of closing you down. But all those things, if you realize they're not the answer, but they could help you work it out for yourself, they might trigger something with you. In other words, you don't need to join anything necessarily. You know, you don't need to look to someone and say, okay, well, I'll do what you say, and then perhaps I'll be as successful as you are. If you look at the experience, those things that people say and do and whatever, but just experience it and know that it's not your answer, it stands a really good chance, just because you would be engaged with it, of triggering something with you. And it's like, and then you're wandering around hoovering, or maybe not hoovering, maybe you've got a cleaner, or walking the dog, or maybe you haven't got a dog, so pushing the cat or whatever. And suddenly something, you know, this thought from the place we were talking about just kind of pops up, and it's like, oh man, that's it. It's really simple. Now I'm going to do this. It's not necessarily a big long plan about everything, because those always change. It's just about what to do with what's right in front of your nose. And that seems a really cool way to live. You know, just let these things just pop up and notice them. I really hope I'm not in danger of giving any advice. Disregard everything I've said. It's probably a good idea.
Yeah, it just felt like a call that's... People listening on the call this evening would have got a tremendous amount of value through it, from it, and also people sort of connecting in through the webcast as well. So I just wanted to take this moment to thank you very much, Nick, for sharing... Just sharing your ideas and your thoughts and your experiences with everyone this evening, and I'm sure people found it to be a very valuable experience.
Yeah, hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it just confused people. As I said, that would be a really good thing. It's like I think we should all wander around a little confused. It seems to be fun.
Cool.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Nick, and thanks everyone for tuning in, and I look forward to having you all on a call very soon. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.